Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
And it is that time of the week again where we focus on matters pertaining to our health. Now, as we head into the festive season, it's natural that we start winding down. Lots of eating, celebrating, and indulging. And there are office parties involved there and family celebrations. And we tend to forget about sticking to a good diet or making healthy choices. But then January rolls around and many of us start thinking about diets, detoxes, and New Year's resolutions. It's also around this time that conversations about weight loss heat up. And one name keeps coming up again and again. Ozempic. People have been talking about Ozempic a lot in the last year or so. Is it really a miracle diet medication? Does it work? Is it safe? That's what we're looking deeper into this afternoon. And with me this afternoon, I've got Chloe Morris, who is a registered dietitian. Chloe, good afternoon and welcome to Radio Pulpit.
Hi, Luco. Thank you so much for having me. Such a privilege to be here to chat to you today.
Oh, man. Thank you for that flexibility to actually join us here. Now, like I said, many people struggle to stay mindful about what they eat during the festive season. So tell us, what are some common nutrition mistakes that people make this time of the year?
That is such a great question and so relatable for so many people. The festive season is one of joy and celebration, but it's also can be such a time of overindulgence as well. And there are quite a few nutrition mistakes that people make this time of year. So the biggest one that I would typically see is what I call an all or nothing mindset, or a very black and white type of thinking about food.
Yeah.
People tend to swing between, you know, full on dieting and restriction before the holidays, and then complete overindulgence during the holidays. And that sort of back and forth mindset can actually make us feel a lot more out of control around food. You know, we almost don't know how to act around it. Big struggle for a lot of people. And I think there's all this pressure to, diet and restrict and lose weight before the holidays. And then everyone has that same pressure coming back from the holidays, which just shows that there's some lack of balance in between all of that. Another thing that often comes up is during the holidays, we often tend to forget about the basics. The three main things that come to mind would be hydration. We don't tend to stay very well hydrated. We often eat quite a lot of beige foods. We forget to add color to our plates. We forget to add fruit and veg and fiber. And then also we don't move as much. And all of this plays a big role in, you know, how we feel and how our bodies process food during that season. But we'll get into that a little bit more down the line. But those are the biggest mistakes I typically see around this time of year.
But tell me, and I'm asking this, Chloe, because I'm one of those people who loves healthy eating. Every now and again, I'll fall back into my routine. But comes festive season. There was a year where I really, really tried. And then there are times where you just fall by the wayside. So is it really, is it really, to try it, to diet during the holidays?
Honestly, not really.
Makes sense.
And that's try and continue a diet during the holiday. And I really think that time of year is the focus should be on connection and celebration and enjoyment. I think if you try and be overly strict, it's just not super realistic around that time. I think it can create maybe a lot of anxiety around food come Christmas and New Year's. What I would encourage with my patients is something I call a maintenance mindset. So if they've been in a good groove and, you know, losing weight or making mindful, healthy choices, you know, throughout the year, come Christmas time, I always say, don't freak out if you're not going to continue your progress. It's not realistic to just try and maintain, focus on your balance and your consistency rather than being perfect. We want to enjoy the festive foods we love, but we also want to keep a little bit of a routine. So eating balanced meals, but staying hydrated and including a little bit of movement where possible. So when you go into January, you're not headed into January with that dreadful feeling that you need to completely start over.
Now, Chloe, Ozempic has become a
feel pretty good, but
oh, sorry about that. You're still saying?
Oh, no, I'm done.
Oh, okay. Now, Ozempic has become a sensation for weight loss. Can you explain what Ozempic actually does in the body and how it works?
Such a hot topic at the moment, right? But yeah, Ozempic is a medication that was originally developed to help manage type 2 diabetes, actually. The active ingredient in Ozempic is called semaglutide, okay, and it mimics a natural hormone in our body called GLP-1. So GLP-1 plays several key roles in the body. Mainly what it does is it helps to regulate our blood sugar levels. It slows down digestion and it signals fullness to the brain. So when GLP is released, you feel satisfied for much longer after eating. But what makes semaglutide or GLP-1 or Ozempic unique is that it's a long-acting version of this hormone. So when our own body's GLP-1 is released, it comes in very short bursts after a meal and it breaks down quickly, but semaglutide stays active in the body for about a week. So you have a once weekly injection. It also acts on appetite centers in the brain. So it helps to really reduce cravings and hence overall food intake. It supports weight loss, but it does that by influencing appetite regulation and eating behavior. I think a lot of people maybe have an idea that it boosts your metabolism or it's fat burning. That's not how it works. It works through appetite regulation and eating behavior that changes quite dramatically after taking that medication.
Now, in the face of that conversation, Chloe, how did it end up being so famous? How did it become popular as a weight loss solution?
So interesting. When people with diabetes started using Ozempic, the doctors started to notice significant weight loss as a side effect. And then that led to them starting a whole bunch of clinical trials, studying semaglutide for obesity management specifically, not just for type 2 diabetes. And eventually there was the approval of Wegovy, which is essentially the same thing as Ozempic. It's the same molecule, but it's just prescribed at a higher dose for weight loss specifically. But I think social media played a huge role in this. It really amplified its popularity. And I think social media often paints it as a quick fix or a shortcut to weight loss as well. But medically, that's not really how it works. Ozempic is designed as a chronic treatment, meaning it's intended for long-term use under medical supervision. It can be such an effective tool, but it really works best when it's paired with nutrition guidance, physical activity, and behavior change. Those things will also help protect that muscle mass and energy levels and make it a more sustainable process.
I must say, it kind of came and replaced one of the famous ones they used to call Duramine. You people in Duramine.
Yes, absolutely. We still actually see that being prescribed now and then. It's still something that people take, but this one is a bit different because it acts a whole lot more on blood sugar as well. But yeah, Duramine, it's still something that's out there. It's still being prescribed. But I know that, I remember that phase as well. That was a big craze.
Now, from a nutrition and health perspective, Chloe, what are the potential risks or downsides of using Ozempic for weight loss?
So there are definitely pros and cons. Such a good question. The most common side effects that we would see quite early on specifically would be things like nausea and bloating or constipation or vomiting. And the reason why that would typically happen is because it slows down your digestion completely. And it also slows down the rate at which food leaves your tummy. So you feel physically full for quite a long time. And if the dose gets increased too quickly, or if someone eats a really rich meal while taking Ozempic, it can leave them with those side effects. And because of that feeling of fullness, another struggle is that people don't tend to eat enough. And then they're missing out on key nutrients like protein. And some people actually become quite nutrient deficient because they essentially just stop eating. And that's if it's not done under proper supervision. But another thing that we really see a lot is muscle loss. And when weight comes off too quickly, people lose that lean body mass and they don't just lose fat. So we really try to avoid that. We want to maintain muscle mass as far as possible throughout weight loss. That's why we need that nutrition support. We need balanced meals, we need enough protein, and we still need to make sure we resistance training. In our practice, we have a machine. It's called an in-body machine, and it's pretty cool. It can actually help us monitor muscle mass and fat mass. So if we're seeing patients who are losing weight quite quickly, we can just make sure that they're on track and not losing too much of it. And then the one other struggle that I can think of is that if someone isn't doing it properly and they suddenly stop it, or it's not combined with long-term habit changes, there's the problem of weight regain that can be quite common. And I think that's really confusing and tough for people who experience that.
Very interesting, Matze, because I think people never think of that side of it. But listen, some people describe Ozempic as changing their relationship with food. Is that true, and how does it happen?
Yes, definitely true. And that's part of what makes it so unique. Because these GLP-1s or Ozempic acts on the brain's appetite and reward centers in the brain, people describe feeling a lot less like preoccupied with food. They're not constantly thinking about like what to eat, when to eat. And that sense of mental quiet for some people is incredibly freeing. It changes their relationship with food completely. Suddenly it's not at the forefront of their mind all the time, especially for people who struggle a lot with cravings and like emotional eating or feeling that food is often on their mind. It's a complicated thing, and I see it really often, and there's actually a term for it. It's called food noise. I don't know if you've ever heard of that term,
but never.
it's a term. I've seen it all over social media these days, and it's becoming more commonly phrased. But that food noise that people speak about is referred to like a constant chatter of pretty intrusive thoughts about food that some people experience throughout the day. So Ozempic works to reduce that food noise, and it makes it easier for people to tune into genuine hunger and fullness signals as opposed to emotional hunger. That healthy relationship with food, it's important to remember it's not just about the appetite. It's about learning to trust yourself, balance your meals properly with enjoyment as well, and being able to eat in a way that's nourishing and flexible. So even with Ozempic, you still have to have that mindful eating and emotional awareness around food. It's still essential for that long-term habit building. But it's interesting. It changes people's relationships with food completely.
It does. It does. I'm really, really intrigued by this. But then what happens when someone stops taking Ozempic? Does the weight, and old habits come back again?
Such a good question. It's probably the most common question we get.
Really?
And I think there's so many. I think people ask about that and they ask about appetite. But this is typical because I think a lot of people consider going on it, but they're really scared to stop it. Or they'll go on it and then they never there's such a fear around trusting themselves again. So if someone stops Ozempic without making the sustainable lifestyle changes, that weight regain can happen because suddenly those appetite and fullness signals go back to how they were before. And that's why we always say the medication can help start the progress, but that long-term success depends on the habits, like consistent eating patterns, your exercise, your sleep, your stress management, all the basics. So what we like to think of it as is a tool, not a cure. So you have to use it alongside proper guidance with proper nutrition and working on those long-term lifestyle habits. But stopping it without those can make it really difficult to maintain those results because suddenly that preoccupation with food might be back or your hunger signals are back. It's quite a tricky one. But if it's not done properly again, then that weight can come back if it's not managed properly.
I feel like, Chloe, you're kind of agreeing with me because I always argue. You know, these famous things that they use, products that they sell, and, you know, they become part of network marketing. They say this helps you lose weight. I always argue to say those products never work if you don't change a lifestyle. You'll find they say this one substitutes a breakfast, but then here's an eating plan and whatnot. And I'm like, so this thing is never going to work by itself.
100%. And it always comes back to that. Like what, you know, what is your foundation looking like?
Yeah.
And if that's not there, I think, you know, there are people who, even while being on Ozempic, they struggle to lose weight. And that's because some of their old habits still haven't changed. Mm. So like you said, it's exactly that. It's not a miracle. It's not this like fantastic cure that just makes you lose weight. It comes down to changing those habits as well.
Very interesting, I must say. Now, tell me, what's your advice for approaching weight and wellness goals in the new year, realistically this time?
That's a good question, and I like the last word you used, realistically. People love a detox, they love an extreme diet, they love coming back from holiday and jumping into a new year's resolution and just claiming that this is going to be their year and they're going to lose the most weight they've ever lost and, you know, change their life completely. But often it's done in quite an extreme way. So I think the key here is to, like I said earlier, look at your foundation. Everyone has a different struggle. Some people might struggle with sugar cravings. Some people may struggle with weekends eating. Some people struggle with alcohol. Like, everyone has a different struggle when it comes to like their weight and their wellness. So identify what that is, what you battle with most, and start with small changes. Set up systems that support you in those changes, and rather be consistent with those changes than try and jump into something extreme. Instead of an extreme diet or detox, focus on those realistic habits you can maintain year round. The allure and the excitement of that quick fix is often so quickly ruined by that feeling of guilt and exhaustion, and everyone eventually gives up on it. So I recommend breaking that cycle and taking a long-term approach. You'll get results. It might not be as quick, but they're going to be the ones that last. If we're looking at your nutrition, one of my favorite tools is known as the plate model. It's really simple, very visual, and really effective. I'd recommend having a Google for everyone who's listening. But essentially what it is, it's a restructuring of your portion in a really strategic way. So first off, what you want to do is fill half your plate with salad and veg. So this is if you're dishing up lunch or dinner. If you fill up half your plate with salad and veg, that's going to add a lot of fiber, and it's going to slow down that digestion and make you feel quite full. It's also going to be great for your blood sugar. Then the a quarter of your plate you want to fill with your lean protein, things like your chicken or your fish or your eggs or your tofu. And you want to aim for your more lean proteins because they're lower in energy, they're better for your heart health. And if you're looking towards weight goals and wellness goals, that will definitely help. And then in the final quarter of your plate, you want to fill it with a healthy carb. So either whole grains or high fiber carbs like whole wheat pasta or brown rice or couscous or whole wheat bread. And that, after filling your plate like that, you're going to have a really full plate, but it's going to be really nourishing. It's going to be good for blood sugar control and fullness without needing to be extreme or count calories. And my favorite thing about this is that it can be applied in so many contexts. You can apply it in the canteen or restaurants or when traveling or the braai or the Sunday lunch. And also cross-culturally, it works amongst all cultures. It's like a really nice framework that I think can be applied anywhere. So that's one of the main ways to see some shifts happen in your wellness and in your weight without overthinking your nutrition too much. One of the other things that I always think about are smart swaps. Like small smart swaps go a long way. So swap your grande cappuccino for a short one, or have a Coke Zero instead of a Coke with your mixer. Think twice before going back for seconds. Give your body a few minutes to register fullness. I think one of the things that we do is we act out of habit and maybe not out of hunger. Yeah. So we often have like an association of right after dinner, you go back and, you know, fill up your plate again. Or right after dinner, you go and grab something sweet. And often it's more out of association and habit than truly what your body's asking for. So it's a little bit of mindfulness as well, tuning into your body a bit more. And I think the one thing that most people struggle with, this one's so real, try and keep your weekend eating similar to your weekdays.
Yeah, it's a difficult one for real.
Because our schedules look so different and we're social and we want to go out. But if we lose complete structure every weekend, it can undo a lot of the progress that we make during the week. So small routines, like maybe you make sure every weekend you're having a balanced breakfast and you start your day with some movement. Things like that can make a really big difference, because it's all well and fine to, you know, smash your goals during the week and then come the weekend and we throw it all away. I think from that perspective, mindfulness, you know, checking in with yourself, building a good foundation, I think those are going to be the changes that yield long-term results, if we're looking at it from that perspective.
Listen, Chloe, I'm going to throw you off a little bit here. Here's just a quick question. You mentioned something about breakfast, and I think recently I saw a discussion somewhere on the socials about breakfast, you know, the normality that we've always known. You need to have breakfast, you know, breakfast should be your first meal of the day. What do you think of something called intermittent fasting?
Very good question, and I hear this all the time. I think it's such a trendy topic at the moment.
Yeah.
Especially in a corporate space, I feel like there's a really big culture in the corporate space around like intermittent fasting. So there's quite a bit of research around it, and there are benefits. There are benefits around insulin and blood sugar balance, and there are really, really cool benefits. But the one thing that I definitely see often is that people who wake up with an appetite will attempt to intermittent fast. And every single day they are like grabbing at the ends of their desk, hungry, waiting for 12 o'clock when they can have their first meal. And so what happens is that in the afternoon, when they've not eaten all morning, they then have their first meal. All throughout the rest of the day, and maybe late at night as well, there will be some sort of overcompensation.
True.
With overeating. And your intermittent fasting is meant to be used as a tool to keep your energy balance in check. But often there's an overcompensation that happens later in the day. So for those people who wake up and they don't really have much of an appetite, and they're only sort of getting hungry around 11 or 12, then that's fantastic. I think it works a lot for some people, works really well, but it's not a hard and fast rule that you need to intermittent fast. I think what matters more is making sure that your blood sugar is nice and stable, and, you know, not spiking your insulin too much. So I think it's a bit of a vague answer in the sense that it works for some people practically based on their personality and their preferences. And they are great benefits, but you can absolutely yield amazing benefits from having breakfast as well. What matters more is your overall intake of energy and nutrients, and how you balance that throughout the day, you know, pertaining to that particular person. So very vague answer,
Lovey. I'm happy because you're showing both sides of the coin, because much like Ozempic, it's right now people are obsessed with this idea of intermittent fasting as though if you don't yield to it, then you don't know what weight loss looks like.
For sure, for sure. No, that's such a good point. And I think one thing that I often see is that if someone is starting their day with a really like nice, high fiber, high protein, blood sugar balancing breakfast, they tend to feel pretty satisfied throughout the day. And yes, they may, you know, maybe a couple hours later they're hungry and then they have lunch and, but that's normal appetite. It's nothing to be ashamed of at all. I think if you're starting your day with a sugary breakfast, something that's going to make you crash, then for sure, that's not going to be great for you. But yeah, there is no harm in breakfast. It's actually amazing. And I think a lot of the time for people who struggle with that overeating late at night and that sort of restriction binge mindset, I would definitely not recommend that they intermittent fast.
I'm very happy with that. Listen, Chloe, I'm going to give credit to you, but I'm also going to give credit to Wellbeings Africa, because guys, Chloe is part of the advisory board at Wellbeings Africa, and they always just give the best of advice, because I don't want you guys going and taking Ozempic now hysterically. Look, if your doctor does prescribe it for some reason, that's for medical reasons, but let's stop falling for all these tricks. Let's stop falling for all these things that social media glorifies, because in the end, they definitely do count at our disadvantage, and we don't want that. So, Chloe, thank you so much. We appreciate this conversation.
Such a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Such an honor to share, and also just share the right information. I think there's so much noise around Ozempic, and it is an amazing tool, but it's a tool, and it should be used in the right context for the right person. I think it's often quite abused, and it has long-term, negative effects. Like you said, it can be to your disadvantage. Thank you for allowing me the platform to share.
Thank you so much, Chloe. Have a lovely one then.
Thanks, you too.
Lalela ukuze uzothola ukukhanya ebumnyameni. Thola i-app yethu manje. Ungangena ku radiopulpit.co.za futhi ungasithola ku DSTV Audio 882 kanti na ku OpenView 607 siyatholakala. Radio Pulpit, umngani wakho imihla ngemihla.
Do you need prayer? Radio Pulpit in collaboration with Need Pray is ready to stand in prayer with you. Contact us today with your prayer request at 012-334-1222 or WhatsApp us on 067-429-7564. You can also visit us on radiopulpit.co.za for your online prayer request. We will faithfully pray with you.
Add your voice to ours. We want to hear from you. Contact us at gospel@radiopulpit.co.za or send a WhatsApp to 082-657-2729. Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
You and 657 AM and life, a winning team on the road to eternity.